Chaves.
May it please the court, Mary Schiavo for Michael Holbrook and honorable counsel for the government. I have reserved some time for rebuttal for honorable counsel's to respond to honorable counsel's argument as well. I will try to limit my remarks to just a couple things that I would like to emphasize in addition to the brief and respond to the case that was filed after the close of the pleadings. Otherwise, I do believe that both sides have very very thoroughly briefed the issues. As the court knows, this case stems around two conflicting federal regulations, 21.143C, which pertains to the certification of new aircraft, and 21.143D, which pertains to the certification of used aircraft. The aircraft herein is a helicopter built in France in 1958. There is no dispute that there were many intervening owners. It is not a new aircraft. We believe the lower court was erroneous in its decision because we think it is clear that those statutes do not allow the FAA inspector to use discretion. In fact, FAA Order 8130.2 specifically states the FAA field office may not waive any of the requirements. We feel very strongly about this because, as is noted in the record and provided in the record to the court, this helicopter was a subject of yet another action in which the government, in the case of Mike's Contracting, agreed that the certification was erroneously provided to this aircraft, that it should not have been provided certification under 21.143C. And therefore, the government admits and admitted in the case and should be stopped from now denying that somehow that was an appropriate use of discretion. The previous litigation, they took an opposite position. It's also very clear in 8130.2D.
Are there two levels of discretion in play in this case? The first being the discretion whether or not to grant the permit or that document or whatever the importation requirement is. And then the second is the level of discretion which would be allowed to an employee undertaking that discretionary function.
That's correct. I agree.
You win on in this case?
I actually both. I think they erred on both parts. They misapplied the overall statute, but then in a regulation, excuse me, but then in applying that regulation, they failed to follow the steps. So they used the wrong regulation. And then in applying that regulation, even if they had discretion to use that regulation, which the FAA orders say they do not.
What do you do with Section 447.09, which says that the FAA can amend, modify, suspend, or revoke a previously granted AC at any time?
Well, that's correct. They can do that for safety reasons and for reasons which they find something is different with the helicopter. There's a safety reason to do so. But here, when they did it, they said they were doing it for safety reasons, and they did do that, Your Honor, you're correct. And they said they were doing it for safety reasons, but as admitted in the Mike's Contracting case, the previous case herein, I mean on the same aircraft, they said they were doing it because it did not have the proper paperwork. It didn't have the certification. So they could find, if they can issue an emergency airworthiness directive, they can ground a plane tomorrow, and the FAA should have that power. But in this case, that's not what they did.
This is a very, very technical area as to whether an airplane is safe to fly. And Congress has given the FAA a great deal of discretion generally as to when to issue a certificate of airworthiness for a helicopter or any kind of aircraft and when to revoke it. And I think that when you get, you know, this is not your normal FTCA suit where you have somebody running off. You have a road constructed in a negligent fashion, or you refuse to put up a guardrail, or somebody commits a tort resulting in some sort of physical injury to an individual plaintiff. What we're talking about here is a very technical area in which Congress has delegated to the FAA a great deal of discretion. both as to when to issue a certificate of airworthiness and when to revoke it and or modify it. And I can't just see, you know, courts jumping into this whole area through the medium of tort litigation and trying to direct and conduct the exercise of agency discretion in this very sensitive area, very technical issue with all kinds of implications for public safety.
Well, I agree, Your Honor. The Federal Aviation Administration needs that power, and there's not a person in this room, certainly not my client or myself, that would want anything other than the FAA to have the highest standards of safety in every case. However, once they have rules and regulations that specify how they should do it, and the really interesting thing about these rules and regulations is it would have made it safer.
You're relying primarily on an order, which you say trumps the regulation.
No, the order helps explain the regulation. The regulation itself says that it is for aircraft that has not been previously owned. So that's already in the regulation. And this aircraft was obviously previously owned. It's an old aircraft, and it's not disputed that it had been previously owned. The order just adds additional explanatory language to that.
Yeah, I know, but under your position, any time that the government feels it has to revoke a certificate of airworthiness that it's previously granted, then it's going to open itself up to a negligent certification suit. And that's really bringing the deterrent power of tort law into a very sensitive area, because the government has to feel free if it thinks that, you know, new technology or new information or whatever has rendered an aircraft unsafe to fly. It has got to have some latitude in revoking that certification of airworthiness without hanging over its head the prospect of an FTCA suit. Because in that case, agencies might say, well, this plane or this aircraft is borderline, but what the heck? We really don't want to find ourselves in court over this, so we'll just let it fly. And, you know, that's really bad from the standpoint of the public, from the standpoint of what the FAA is supposed to do. It's bad from the standpoint of what the statute is supposed to accomplish. It seems to me that it burdens what Congress wanted to do in delegating authority in this area to the FAA. And it really crimps Section 44709 of the statute, which gives them broad latitude for revocation.
It does give them broad latitude for revocation where safety is concerned. But what we're arguing here is that they didn't reach that level. This was a certificate that was not properly issued in the first place.
Why are we so sure about that?
Because the government has admitted it in Mike's Contracting, the case which is also concerns his helicopter, which was attached here,
too. Just look at that. Why, you think because in applying C, that clearly was wrong?
Yes, Your Honor.
As to what the government has and hasn't admitted, why didn't C let me know that what the government did in this case in the certificate process was wrong?
Because it applies to aircraft that do not have previous owners. It applies, C states that it applies to aircraft that have come from the manufacturer or have not had previous owners, and this one didn't. This one, admittedly, was a very old helicopter.
So do you have a copy of C in front of you? What about that do you say is clearly, because I take it your argument is that the inspector clearly was negligent or wasn't just using the discretion under the theory that you're not using your discretion if you do something so clearly wrong that's outside of discretion. What in there specifically do you think causes the clear error in what he did? What language?
Well, the language, you know, I will agree that...
I'm not agreeing with anything. I'm asking you. What language do you think should have... should point out to us, it's very clear that at the time he granted the permission under C, that he clearly, beyond any question, was wrong.
Two things. One, that And I don't have that right in front of me. I will get it. But okay. One, from memory, one is that the C applies to aircraft that have not had a previous owner.
Where's
that's
that?
One issue.
I don't see that. I'm looking at C.
I understand your argument that the government has now said that D should be applied to this type of situation. But where is it so clear that C wouldn't apply or could not be taken to apply at the time the inspector applied C?
And while I'm pulling that out, okay. And the second part of my answer is also that there are a number of things that they have to do under C, which includes having present the certificate, the export certificate of airworthiness, in this case from France.
No, I'm just looking at the language. Can you find that language? Maybe if you can't, then I understand. Maybe you can answer that when you come back up. But
okay.
I don't mean to take all your time looking for it. Can you?
I'll pull it out.
Okay.
But your real complaint is with the revocation. If there'd been no revocation, you wouldn't be here.
Well, what we're rarely arguing is the real
case, in my judgment, is what caused you the injury was the revocation. Without the revocation, you'd still be flying. It's, you know, and I know you want to tie the grant into it because you bought it relying on the grant, but your basic problem is with the revocation.
Well, you could also say it's with the issuance in the first place. If it hadn't been issued in the first place, we wouldn't be having this problem, and it was erroneously issued. So it is a bit of a chicken and egg.
I agree with what he asked because it is a revocation that hurts you, but I'm looking at your theory of the case. Your theory of the case is now the government admits that it was an error to have given it in C, to given it under C,
right,
permit, and a clear error can't be covered under discretionary function. That's your argument, isn't it?
Yes. Well, it's not just a clear error can't be covered under the discretionary function.
I'm using that the error made in this case, because it was clear, takes it outside of any protection of discretion.
Yes, and there was no good discretion granted in the things that must be done.
Even if there was an error in granting the certificate in the first place, and I'm not at all sure there was, but let's assume arguendo that it was. I'm still not clear that removes the revocation out of the ambit of the discretionary function exception, because that language is broad. It says it can amend, modify, suspend, revoke previously granted ACC at any time. And you want the government, in fact, if it thinks it made an error, to be free to correct the error without being subject to litigation. And this is not your typical FTCA suit. Most of your typical FTCA suits come from people who have suffered bodily injury at the hands of the government or something like this. You are arguing essentially adverse economic regulatory effects. And, you know, the Varig Airlines case for the Supreme Court said, don't go there. We're not going to take this Federal Tort Claims Act statute and have it expand it and broaden it to cover every kind of adverse economic effect that somebody suffers. Now, you've exceeded. We've given you extra time. You've got 7 minutes that you've reserved for rebuttal, and I want you to think about that, okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
You've got 7 minutes of rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. O'Malley?
Good morning, Your Honor. Or afternoon. Not sure which it is.
Could you put the...
I think I'd better do that, or you won't.
Is
that okay?
We want to hear you.
I'm sort of... I want to correct one thing right off the bat. I don't, of course, agree that the government should be... is stopped from arguing or taking the position that it is taking in this case. That other litigation, though, I do want to say this, in that litigation involving this very helicopter, the government said, and if you look at JA 677, that in that case, which is called Mike's Contracting versus the United States, which was a federal claims court case, United States Court of Federal Claims, we said Section 21.183C governs the issuance of airworthiness certificates for foreign manufactured aircraft like this helicopter. So we're not taking a different position on that at all. Just to clear the record, I don't know how much difference it makes, but it's just not a correct statement. I think the real issue here is not so much the selection of C, I'm just going to say C to make it easier, which the district court explained there in the very order that the plaintiff is relying on, there are paragraphs that contradict one another. One says you use C. Another says, no, you use D. I can give you the exact paragraphs, but they're in the briefs. And the judge kind of, I think, got it right.
Is it your position that originally applying C in this case was not clearly wrong?
Is my position that deciding it on the basis of C was not
clearly wrong?
Clearly wrong. Yes,
that
it is.
Your position, isn't it?
Because it's not a specific policy. It can't be specific if it's contradicting, if this inspector is getting different directions.
I agree with that, and I think it is your position it wasn't clearly wrong, but I mean, let's assume the more interesting question, it may not be posed by this case, but the more interesting question is, let's suppose you made an error in granting the certificate of airworthiness. Does it then deprive you of the discretion under 44709 to revoke the certificate of airworthiness or modify it or whatever without that revocation becoming actionable? That's what I would like to know.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Let's suppose you erred in granting the certificate of airworthiness.
Okay.
Do you still have discretion in the interest of public safety to revoke the certificate of airworthiness at a later date if you become convinced that the aircraft is not safe to fly?
Yes, Your Honor, the administrator has to have that discretion, and you rightly recognize that.
Because we'd be in a real dilemma if we had a situation where revocation and modification was actionable. You'd have a lawsuit every time. Because you'd say, well, we flew with this, with this certificate of airworthiness in mind. Now it's been revoked, and to me, that just makes mincemeat of the discretionary function exception, and it eviscerates 44709, and the discretion that Congress. You know, it's hard to imagine more discretionary language than that's in that section of the statute, and Congress wanted the FAA to be able to take actions which in its good judgment, and the safety of aircraft is a judgmental act. And it wanted it to be free in this technical area to make those kinds of discretionary judgments without being in court every time it does so. I mean, the implications of this for air safety are truly serious.
I don't disagree, Your Honor, but as counsel for the United States, I have had cases where plaintiffs unsuccessfully challenged the discretion of the administrator and lost. However, some courts take the position that the administrator has limited the discretion that the statute provides by imposing specific standards upon those implementing it.
But I'm asking you what your position is. I thought your position was that there ought to be a considerable amount of discretion vested in the commissioner with these sorts of decisions.
Yes, it is. But of course, the administrator's decisions are made through people under him or her. And sometimes constraints are placed upon the exercise of discretion.
Well, what constraints were placed upon the exercise of discretion here with respect to the revocation?
Well,
we've talked about the order.
Are you asking me still to assume that the safety inspector made a mistake or used the wrong standard for deciding to issue the airworthiness to the helicopter? Am I to assume that?
Yeah, why don't you assume it?
Well, if I assume that, then it follows, does it not, that the FAA is not, it's still, remember, it's suspended, this certificate. It's suspended. It can remain suspended indefinitely, but arguably, I feel like I'm arguing against the position that I really want to take. Arguably, it can be addressed in a court of law, whether or not the inspector negligently issued the certification. If the inspector, in so doing, violated a specific statutory or rule of the FAA or standard in this order, my position is it is not specific. I'm speaking very personally. I read through this rather lengthy and convoluted and confusing order and found that, well, if you read this part of it, looks like it should be C and we have to do this. But on the other hand, look over here at this part. This says, no, you've got to use D and you've got to subject this aircraft to 100-hour flying tests.
Are you suggesting that you are concerned about what, because of what some courts have said, that if there's been a change in the certification process, that may open the door for legal action on the initial certification if it was wrong? Whereas if the initial certification was not wrong, a subsequent modification makes no difference whatsoever. Is that what you're telling us?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, I think it is. Didn't you just say that some courts say that if there has been an initial mistake, that could lead to a cause of action?
No, they've said if the policy, the regulations of the agency have restricted the discretion of the individual making the mistake.
Which would be if you had to apply D and you applied C.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That might allow for
an action. For an action.
But so in your argument, best bottomed in, there was no mistake.
That's
applying
right.
C. Because you may or may not agree that even if there had been a mistake, there would have been a cause of action. But if there was no mistake in the initial certificate process, you don't even have to worry about that little sliver of possibility. Isn't that
That's
your
right.
position?
That's our position.
And then why was there no mistake here in applying C, although the government later changed or clarified or whatever you say that D should be applied now? Why was there not a mistake in applying C originally?
The FAA didn't really change. It did clarify because inspectors, not surprisingly, were using C maybe when they should have been using D. They were confused.
And that's, let's stop for a second. And that certainly addresses the concern that Judge Wilkinson has raised, which is the government has to be in a position to keep up to date with safety information and technology. They just have to.
Absolutely.
Number one. But number two, the point is, you acknowledge that, but you're concerned, as I understand it, with some area of the law, which apparently indicates, even if there is now a change, that there might lead to some cause of action, a change that's worthy and worthwhile, it could possibly lead to a cause of action based on the initial certificate process if that had been in error. Not that you endorse that concept, but you just acknowledge the possibility of that concept.
Yes.
And in this case, let me ask you, and do you think the fact that the government has now clarified its process to say you use D, is that any admission that C was incorrect at the time it was used in this case?
No, it's not. And I would point out that this litigation in which we are arguably taking a contrary position occurred in 2007, 2008, 2006, something like that. The inspector certified this in 2001. He gave it the airworthiness.
Let me ask this much. Is there anything in C, in looking at C at the time the inspector applied C for the helicopter in this case, that indicates C clearly does not apply?
No, just the opposite. C itself is headed import aircraft, as is this helicopter, and the text expressly refers to aircraft type certificated, this is very technical, in accordance with section 21.29, which sets forth regulations promulgated by the FAA pertaining to acceptance for export and import.
I'm not going to try to make you prove negative, but, you,
no,
but as I understand, your argument is
right in the text is
that in applying C, when he did in 2001 or whatever the date was, he wasn't, at least I'm going to use this term, so clearly wrong as to take it outside of a discretionary act by him.
No, he certainly was not, and that's consistent with what the district court also held, and consistent with D also refers to this 21.29.
I'm not suggesting now that he wouldn't have an argument had he used D to start with. But the question since he did apply C, it strikes me we have to look at, is it clear that C, the way it was written, at the time he applied it, was he so clearly wrong that somehow it would be not an act of discretion, but an act of intentional wrongdoing, sort of?
Well, it certainly wasn't an act of intentional wrongdoing in the way it was written then, and continues to be, you know, written that way.
Well, I think what we're driving at here is that you have to have some discretion in modifying, revoking certificates of airworthiness, and that is because conditions in the air change, air traffic patterns change, concepts of what is safe change, aircraft sometimes age, they get older, they're more dangerous after a period of years than they were when they first came off the assembly line. And there are all kinds of ways that that exercise of discretion has to be reserved to the FAA to revoke and modify and suspend these certificates of airworthiness based on advances in technology and change conditions.
Yes.
And it is very important not to constrain that discretion by saying that once you grant a certificate of airworthiness, that litigation and the threat of litigation locks you in for all time. This is an adverse economic effect, and I think Varig Airlines is very reluctant to extend the discretionary to put adverse economic effects broadly under the Federal Tort Claims Act.
Well, and of course, it's also fair to note that the applicants who receive these airworthiness certificates know they can be revoked for the very reasons, or suspended for the very reasons you're talking about. So they really, it's not like you get the certificate and the constraints
on discretion would have to be really clear. They would have to be, yes. You know, what Judge Shedd said resonates with me. It has a, you know, I think it's right. It would almost have to be some sort of deliberate or clearly erroneous decision, you know, contrary to law or whatever. It'd have to be really bad before you get into this, because when you take an aircraft, you know that you're subject to all kinds of regulations. You're subject to airport rules, you're subject to safety regulations, and you bear a certain risk that those are going to change, that the approval of flight paths may change, all kinds of things change. And your position has to be that, please don't lock us in on this kind of thing. To do so would be contrary to Congress's explicit delegations to the FAA, which were broad in terms of the discretion it could exercise, and to the importance that the administrator and those to whom it delegates authority plays in ensuring air safety for the general public. If your discretion is constrained, I don't care what, you know, some courts might do this or some courts might do this, but if your discretion is unduly constrained in terms of suspension or revocation, then I would suggest you argue to a future court, we're in deep trouble.
I don't disagree. The discretion has to be exercised. They have to have that flexibility. The aircraft here was not denied, the certificate was suspended. They have the opportunity to get the documentation together and to come back and get an air.
This is not a static business. Conditions in the air and the design of aircraft don't remain static for all time.
The FAA could have said, instead of suspending this, we're grounding them. They're too old. They're impossible. We can't certify their airworthiness. Could have done that. It did not. It suspended it and gave them an opportunity to come back and document.
Thank you.
Sum up, I'm not going to reach the second argument that we introduced about the misrepresentation exception. I did prepare a fair amount on that.
Well, you're not waiving it.
I know we're not waiving it, because no answer was filed, for sure. And it's briefed, but I admit to being a little disappointed that we didn't get that far. But I'm also very pleased, and thank you very much. I think you're quite right about the way you're approaching this case. But the lawsuits will continue. Because you know that better than I.
There is no doubt.
Thank you very much.
No, men are mortal, lawsuits are immortal. So okay. There we go. Well, you've got some rebuttal time.
A little bit. Just have to correct a couple things. The point about they were given the opportunity allegedly to come back with more paperwork and try to prove that the aircraft was entitled to have the certification under C. That's not correct. As contained in the record, the Federal Aviation Administration instructed the France manufacturer and the government of France not to issue any more certificates of export. Why they did that, I don't know, but they were stopped.
Did the lease agreement not cover this possibility that the certificate would be lost? The lease contract just didn't cover this potentiality?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it was just not something that someone would...
Anybody thought about it at
that? Right, because... This was something that the Federal
Aviation... I don't want to take anything else away from your argument.
That's important what you've just said. This was something that the Federal Aviation Administration, this was not the only one. They were doing this all over the country. The government had done this in a number of cases. People, I think, were entitled to rely upon the fact that the government says, oh, this is an okay helicopter. They did it time and time again. Mike's aviation and Mr... Holbrook were not the only one.
Is something at subsection C that you think is clearly wrong?
And we did, I thought that we included the legislative history in the record at 769.
I'm not asking about legislative history. I'm asking about the actual language itself.
Right. The actual language itself does not say new. You're absolutely correct. But since...
I didn't say that.
Oh,
I didn't say it didn't say new. I'm absolutely correct. I didn't say that. I'm asking you, is there something in C which you would point out that the inspector clearly violated when he granted a certificate?
Yes. That includes shall be issued a certificate when the government of the nation, the government of the country where the aircraft is manufactured, provides certification that it meets the standards, the type certificate, and then also provides the C of A, the export certificate. They didn't have that here, so it was impossible to satisfy that. So there was no way that it could have had a proper certificate in the first place under C. And that's why it was important.
No, but it says if the country in which the aircraft was manufactured certifies and the administrator finds that the aircraft conforms to the type of design and then the condition for safe operation. I thought that was the issue. That the issue was what was that certificate which was issued that was taken to satisfy that section, that provision, wasn't it?
Yes, but they didn't have it. They had a statement instead. They had an attestation instead of the certificate. They didn't actually have the...
Was there a certificate?
On this one? No. No, they got an attestation. They had an attestation instead. They didn't
What's
present...
What's the difference between an attestation and a certificate?
That's the whole gist of this whole problem. When the certificate... When the airworthiness certificate was issued, the Federal Aviation Administration said they were comparable. They were the same. In fact, the affidavit of the FAA inspector is in here, and he says, look,
he's comparable, and he's looking at this record. Couldn't he make the judgment that the attestation was sufficient to satisfy the requirements?
He did, except the FAA order, which, you know, admittedly is a big order, says that you cannot use discretion. You must provide those elements exactly as requested in the regulation. So that's what he did, but he didn't have the authority to do that under the regulation.
I thought you were addressing whether he should use C or D, and you indicated that he clearly should have used D and not C.
But right.
It seems to me now it looks like C might have been the appropriate.
No, C was not the appropriate one in any case.
Why not? It addresses import.
It addresses imports, but D, again, you do have to use the other order. I'm not saying you don't have to look at other parts of the regulations.
You have the order there, page 237 of the JA. At the top of the page, would that suggest to him that he should use C?
No, because there's also D. It doesn't say there's just a C. And if he had read...
Says D, it does address D. It says the regulatory is D for all others. And all others, the distinction is between whether there has been a type certification under 2129 or not. And since this is imported and had that certification, you would use C according to this provision.
According to this provision, yes.
That's part of the order, isn't it?
That's part of 8130.2D. Yeah,
that's the order you're talking about that he would have consulted.
He would have consulted, but there are other sections in the order that make it clear that there are requirements for each one of those sections. This is not the only thing in this rather voluminous 8130 that applies to C.
Well, I grant you that there's some other ones that create some ambiguity about where used aircraft should fit.
Correct.
And, I'm suggesting to you that you read this and it's not altogether clear. Somebody has to make a judgment. And this particular inspector said he consulted his supervisors and found it appropriate to certify what he did.
Well, he consulted his supervisors, and the supervisors, again, they looked at accepting something that 8130 says you cannot accept. 8130 specifically says you do not have the discretion to supplement something else. No field office is entitled to waive any requirements.
I thought we were talking about the issue of whether we apply C or D. And it looked to me like this, the C on its face doesn't help you much. And this provision I cited you to, although there may be some innuendos or tension with other provisions, this one seems to say you decide between C and D based on whether it has been certified by type.
Right. This one says that, but there are other provisions that say other things, including that for aircraft with previous owners, you use the D section. So yes, I mean taken
it
this
said,
section.
The
alone,
other ones you're referring to, where it says to use the D section for, it uses the word generally. It says generally for used, you use D. It has the word generally. Now the question generally might allow this section on page 237 to apply, wouldn't? Isn't that at least an argument for this man who's trying to make this decision?
Mr. Chadbourne, the
yes.
inspector.
Yes.
If he read this, I mean, if he read this individually and didn't read all of his other regulations and didn't read the entire order, he might come to that conclusion looking at this paragraph. I agree. But we say
and
that he should
said
use
he
this.
He consulted his supervisors too. So somebody was making a judgment, right?
Well, someone was making a decision, but what they were supposed to do was to follow the regulations, and
well,
they were
are,
supposed.
He's doing his best. I mean, we have no evidence that he was trying to cheat the government or cheat anybody.
No,
he was,
sir.
He was trying to do his duty.
And it's years after the fact, and here we are right now. Several of us still can't see why C doesn't apply on those circumstances. I mean, that seems to me that's sort of the definition of discretion.
Well, and there's just one more thing I do have to correct, because there's one thing different here in this case, and I had the I worked on the other one, the misrepresentation case that was attached, and we did respond to misrepresentation. That was incorrect. In our reply brief, we responded, and we argued why the misrepresentation should not apply. Honorable counsel for the government did send an opinion that I got in another case that I worked on, but it was past the time to file any responses. But I do want to respond to that in my 1 minute left, because that case was very different. In that case, the inspector who did this work was a designated examiner. He was not a government employee. He was someone that they hired to do this. The FAA is allowed to do this. They're allowed to hire designated airworthiness representatives.
You know, one of the misapprehensions that it is that mandatory language in something removes discretion under the Federal Tort Claims Act. And, you know, it's not clear to me that it does. And because in the Ninth Circuit has a wonderful quote where it says the existence of mandatory language does not eliminate discretion when broad goals involved and when the broad goals involved require discretion in achieving them, which seems to fit this situation to a T. And if you know, it cannot be the case that every time somebody arguably. Runs afoul of mandatory language, that makes everything non-discretionary from that point out. The point is, Congress has delegated to the FAA broad discretion in achieving a paramount public goal. And you don't defeat that by taking something out of an order, which is admittedly a total mess, but that, you know, you can't just pick one strand out of an order and say that defeats everything Congress was trying to accomplish in the program. And you know, there have been attempts after attempt to point, well, there's this word shall, or there's this word, you know, must or whatever, and that removes the discretion. Sometimes it does, but plenty of times it doesn't. You have to consider what Congress was trying to do. You know, We've let you go well past your time, and we appreciate it, but we've given you the allotted time and then some.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. We'll adjourn court.